World to Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue Announcer, Jeff Smith.
And I am Jeff Smith, the Rogue Announcer, and this is Rogue Talk for July 20th, 2018. And we've got another great show lined up for you today. I got a couple of people in the studio with me today. We're going to be talking to both of them a little bit later on. We're going to talk a little bit about the NBA. I know most of you probably aren't sports fans, but there's a few of you out there are. And these two are a couple of sports experts, at least local sports experts. So we're going to talk to them. And that would be the Rogue Talk mascot, Cameron, my son, and my new intern, Hunter, and this will be Hunter's first time on the radio. He's really looking forward to that. Of course, we talked a little bit about Hunter last week, that he's here this summer working with me as an intern. He's from the Hidden Valley High School. He just graduated from Hidden Valley High School, and he'd like to get into radio work. So he's going to work with me all summer, and we're happy to have him here. So we'll talk to those two gentlemen later on in the show. And the other things we're going to talk about today, we'll talk a little bit about the fires. Of course, lots of fires going on in Oregon right now. And we're going to get into a few issues related to those fires, including the latest information that I could find on the fires closest to us, and most notably would be the Pleasant Creek fire. So I've got some information on that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the big uproar over the summit in Helsinki where Trump was apparently a little too friendly to Vladimir Putin, the dictator or leader of the country of Russia. And I've got some things, some thoughts about that probably some of the thoughts I have will please one side, and some of them will probably please the other side. I'm not a hardliner on this, and I'm definitely not a hardliner when it comes to support of President Trump. But we're going to make some distinctions that go along with this latest kind of uproar, and why on one hand I think that we have to take it seriously to a certain point, but on the other hand, I think cries of treason might be a little overboard, and you really have to buy into a lot of the things that have been said, but over the year and a half of his presidency and even before his presidency, but none of them have really been backed up. So if your thought process is strictly off of a narrative and not off of facts, your reaction is going to be a little different to things than if you're trying to just look at the facts. And that's what I'm going to try and do. Now, you know, I'm no different than any other person. I do have some biases, of course, but I want to look at the facts, and maybe we can kind of tamp things down on both sides of the issue and not be so hyperbolic all the time. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So I hope you're going to enjoy that. We've got a great guest coming in next week. One of my frequent guests on this show, Amber Cripps. She's been in talking about the FFA program at the high school. She's been in couple of times, two or three times, I think. I'd have to look back now, but definitely at least two times. And she's going to be coming in. She's getting ready to head off to college, and we're going to bring her in, have her talk about her high school experience and all of the exciting things she's looking forward to going to college, and some of the things that are kind of scary and new things she's going to experience. I think it'll be helpful if you have. You know, I don't know that I get a lot of listeners that are high school age kids, but if you have a high school age kid that's, you know, maybe he's a year away from college, or maybe he's getting ready to head off to college or off to the armed forces or something along those lines, I think that we're going to find out some interesting things from Amber that, you know, might be helpful or might be an experience that other people can share with her. So I'm looking forward to having her in here. She's a pretty special young lady, and I love having her on the show, and I'm looking forward to next week. So that's what's going on there. One more announcement I want to get to so I don't forget, in case we get too deep into the NBA talk at the end of the show. I don't want to forget. Tonight is the Community Center dinner, and of course that will be at the Community Center. Starts at 5 o'clock. And tonight's menu is pot roast. And every Community Center dinner has a sponsor, but this month's sponsor, that's a hard one for my lips to get out without lisping, is anonymous. So we don't know who the sponsor is this month, but we want to tip our hat to them either way for sponsoring this month's dinner. And again, it will be pot roast. It'll start at 5 o'clock. $7 for adults and $3.50 for kids ages 10 and under. And we're looking forward to another Community Center dinner, a good time for the community to get together, share a meal, and have a really good time. And so that'll be tonight. So let's get over to some of the news I wanted to talk about. Of course, we know that the fires have been in the front of everybody's minds, and even if the fires haven't been directly affecting you, you know, haven't been close enough to you that you're worried about, you know, that you might have to evacuate, we've been kind of reminded in the last 2 days that fire season is here, because we've been just enveloped in smoke. And it's coming from all different places because the whole state is on fire, seemingly. We had all those thunderstorms come through, and they started many, many fires. I think I heard one number that Southern Oregon has had as many, I believe the number I saw was 160 fires. I believe most of those were lightning caused, although I don't think all of them were, but a good portion of those were. So those thunderstorms have caused quite a bit of havoc. And of course, the one of the more notable fires recently was not one of the biggest ones, but it got probably the most local media attention, and that was the Penninger fire. Of course, that was in Central Point about a week ago, or no, just probably just a few days ago. I think it was Tuesday, actually, when that one started. And that was started on the Greenway, and as it turns out, there was one fatality from that fire. We don't know who that person is yet. We don't know, you know, there's a possibility that the same person that was killed by the fire may have been the person that caused the fire. We don't know the cause yet. We don't know if it was intentional or accidental. But because it was on the Greenway, unfortunately, the first thing we all think about is the transient population. They tend to live along the Greenway in various places, and we've already had some fires on the Greenway this year, and some of those, unfortunately, were caused by the transient population. And so you that's immediately where your mind goes to when another fire pops up on the Greenway. So we'll hopefully know more about that in the coming days as they do their investigation. But unfortunately, it seems that some of these fires that have started recently may have even been intentionally set. And that's another troubling situation with the fire danger now in the extreme category that just changed today. You know, we're always worried about, you know, these fires starting, and you would hate to have to think about people starting fires intentionally. But unfortunately, it does happen and has happened recently. So let's move on to the Pleasant Creek fire. Of course, the Pleasant Creek fire is part of the Garner Complex. And the Garner Complex is a total of about 1,700 acres now. And it's only 8% contained. And the Pleasant Creek fire is part of that complex. The Pleasant Creek fire is 400 acres. Overnight, they found a new spot fire that they've kind of added to their list of the different parts of these fires. And the last that I looked, and there's been some, you know, some talk back and forth since last night until now about the evacuation levels changing for certain people. And this is the latest information I was able to find. This is from about noon today. And they're still having a level 2 evacuation for the addresses of 5047 through 7948 Pleasant Creek Road. Level 2 meaning you should be ready to go. You're not, there's no mandatory evacuation yet, but you should be ready to go at a moment's notice, packed up and ready to go. But there are 7 houses at the end of the road, and they don't give you what those addresses are, but 7 houses have already been evacuated. They're at a level 3, which means evacuate now. And that fire continues to grow. And depending on the weather conditions will depend on how they can get a handle on that. And one other fire of note within the Garner complex, the ditch fire grew pretty significantly overnight from yesterday until today. It went from 5 acres to 60 acres. So that's another concerning one when they're growing that quickly. It's something that they're going to need to try and get a handle on sooner than later. I don't know the exact location of that fire, but something else that they're going to be watching. And if you'd like more information for any of the fires going on in the state, you can go to swofire.com, swofire.com, and you can get any information on the fires going on here in the state. Now, another one of the big fires going on in the state is about 70,000 acres, is what I believe I read. That's the substation fire. And I've got some audio I'd like to get to here. It's a little hard to hear, and we can talk about what's in this audio. I'll turn it up the best that I can. This comes from Lars Larson. Lars Larson, a talk show host, both with a national show and a regional show for Oregon, Washington, and I believe he's even heard in parts of Idaho. But he was at a press conference with the governor and some of the experts on these fires, and he had a question about the global supertanker. If you don't know what the global supertanker is, it's a 747 that can be used for firefighting. I don't have all the details on it in front of me, but it can drop many, many times more water or retardant than the traditional bombers and helicopters. And it flies at such a speed, it is capable of up to 600 miles an hour because it is a 747. Its turnaround time is fairly quick. You can imagine with now, obviously, the refueling and refilling time might be a little longer, but it makes up for that in the speed that it can get there. It's not as agile as some of the other firefighting apparatus, but it can drop a lot more material. And in a lot of cases, especially when it comes to water, it drops it much more efficiently. If you go on to YouTube and just search global supertanker, there's a video showing it do a water drop. I obviously can't show you that here on radio, but it's impressive the length and the consistency of the water drop that it makes compared to a helicopter drop, which is very concentrated and very effective at what it does, but can't cover near the area that this global supertanker can do. But let's take a listen to this audio, and I'll try and translate some of it for you if you can't quite hear it. And let's get to that right now.
Talked about having all the resources available being used. You signed a contract with the state, some contract earlier this year, the Global Supertanker. Checked with them this morning. The company says the plane's ready to go, but they have not been called up by the state. With one person dead and 50,000 acres on fire, just at the substation fire, is there a reason you haven't called up that resource?
We've got two Chinooks on the substation fire, and I'll let Mr. Graff respond to the supertanker.
Yeah, I appreciate that question. We do have a call when needed agreement with the supertanker company. This is an aircraft that falls in the category of very large tanker. There are also DC-10s available in that category. We have flown the supertanker in Oregon successfully, and they did an excellent job for us on the Klamathon fire, where we lost 84 structures in California. That fire burned 32,000 acres. $32 million in suppression costs in Oregon. We burned 2,000 acres on that fire, and that's where we flew the super tank. It helped to hold the line to the north, so it's been very effective. An incident commander on the ground will order a VLAT, a very large air tanker, when they see the need for that resource, and they'll receive one of those types of aircraft, which could be that particular company.
How much water retardant does a Chinook put on the fire?
Chinooks are helicopters that can deliver water in the 1,000-gallon range. They often have quick rotations. Those are a fantastic resource for us, and we typically have water nearby, and they'll do what we call a round robin and continuously hit that fire with that water.
So, Doug.
Okay, so the question about the Chinook helicopter was just to contrast that the supertanker can drop, you know, maybe 10 times that. Again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but really what the gist of the matter is, you've got a fire that's 70,000 acres. A lot of what it's burning is farmland. Farmland is flat. There's no reason they can't fly this supertanker in on this 70,000 acre fire, and that's what Lars Larson was getting at. And you know, this is the typical, this went on longer, they passed it on to another guy and he talked for a while, and basically they're just giving him the runaround. They really didn't want to answer his question. But the interesting thing I found there, he tried to take credit for them using it at the Klamathon fire. Now, they did use it at the Klamathon fire, but the Klamathon fire was in California. Yes, it crossed the Oregon border, but it was primarily in California. That was not an Oregon fire. It was not managed by Oregon. The Oregon did cooperate in the firefighting, especially because it was coming across the border into Oregon, but that was a California fire. California signed on to use the supertanker long before Oregon did, and they're willing to use it when they need it. Oregon has still resisted. I don't really know why. And they give this verbal runaround when you ask them the questions, as they did here with Lars Larson. So I'm not sure what that's all about. I don't know what, why they would, you know, want to not use such a powerful resource. Only they can answer that question, and thus far they've refused to do so. So I don't know what to tell you on that. I hope they change their mind on that. You know, it'd be a little tougher to use in a lot of situations down here in Southern Oregon, because of the terrain, but this thing has been used in other places, including Israel. I believe they've used it in Australia, and there has been situations where they've used it in terrain that is not the best of terrain. But because of just the sheer volume of material that this thing can put out, they don't have to be as precise and still get a pretty effective use of the asset. So we'll have to see what happens down the road with that. I will say personally, I have friends that live on Pleasant Creek. I have a daughter that lives on Pleasant Creek currently. She's not that far out, but if that fire continues to spread, it could affect her. So my heart goes out to everyone that's dealing with these fires, no matter where you are. We hope you're okay. We hope you have a plan, that you're ready to go if you need to go. You know, there things are replaceable, but you know, make sure you have some of those important papers in your go bag. Make sure that you can get your pets out. If you have other livestock and you're worried about it, you need to find a place to take them now. Don't wait until it's level 3. Have something lined up and ready to go. But our heart goes out to you here at 94.3 The Bridge. We know it's a tough thing, and we hope it doesn't come any closer to any of you. But you know that your community will rally around you as we get through these horrible fires. So I had one other thing I wanted to talk about. This comes from the Rogue River Press. Brian Mortensen has a lengthy article about our friend Cole Watson. Cole, a distance runner and a Rogue River High School alum. And Cole has a new sponsorship. He was already sponsored by Hoka 1-1, which is a shoe company. And he now has a sponsorship with a nutrition company. And that company is called Spring Energy. And not only are they obviously helping him financially with some of his travels and the things he has to do to go to these races that he competes in, but they've also helped him with his nutritional planning for his training. So we want to give a hat tip to Cole Watson and wish him well. We're super happy that he's got that second sponsor now, and he's winning some big races and doing really, really great things. And in fact, his next race will be a 31-kilometer race in the Swiss Alps. And that is called the Sierra Zinal. And I'm probably not saying that right, but, you know. But again, there's a lengthy article in the Rogue River Press written by Brian Mortensen. Go check that out and learn more about all the things Cole Watson has been doing. So I'm going to try and get my voice back during the break, and we'll come back with a little talk about all of the political fallout of the meeting between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. But before we get to that, we will be right back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. The tourist town of Branson, Missouri is mourning for more than a dozen sightseers who were killed when a duck boat capsized and sank in stormy weather. It appeared to be the deadliest such accident in almost two decades. Divers found four more bodies Friday in Table Rock Lake, bringing the death toll to 17, including the crew member who was driving the amphibious boat. Investigators blame thunderstorms and winds that approached hurricane strength. Forecasters say at least five tornadoes touched down as an unexpected swarm of destructive storms hit central Iowa. The National Weather Service said Friday that it'll take days to determine the strength and total number of the twisters that hit three towns on Thursday afternoon. The storms injured at least 17 people. On Wall Street, the Dow down by 6 points, the NASDAQ dropped 5, the S&P lower by 3, oil up 85 cents to $70.31 a barrel. More details at srnnews.com.
Broadcasting to Rogue River, Gold Hill, Weimer, and beyond. 94.3, The Bridge. With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. We're going to start with the golf and the British Open, and Kevin Kisner, his economical opening round Thursday has put him atop the leaderboard. Kisner took only 22 putts in completing a 566 that leaves him one stroke ahead of Tony Finau, Xander Lomard, and Erik van Rooyen. Kisner was one over going into the fifth hole when he hit a 3-iron into the par 5 and sunk a long putt for eagle. Says it's nice to play well in the opening round because the British is unpredictable.
You never know what the weather's going to hold, the golf course is going to hold, so you always just trying to get it in and get in as low as you can because you never know what the next day's going to have.
Tiger Woods used his driver just once en route to a 71. NBA news, Carmelo Anthony, one and done in Oklahoma City. A person with knowledge of the details says the Thunder are sending the veteran NBA forward in a 2022 protected first-round pick
to Atlanta in exchange for guard Dennis Schroeder, and Anthony will then be waived. This is SRN Sports. Moving on to Major League Baseball, the Chicago Cubs won the first game since the league all-star break to open a three-game lead over Milwaukee in the NL Central. Ian Happ belted a two-run homer to cap the Cubs' five-run fifth and a 9-6 win over the Cards Thursday. Chicago trailed 3-1 in the fifth until Anthony Rizzo's RBI double sparked the comeback. Jason Hayward tied it with his second RBI single of the night before Ben Zobrist lifted a sac fly to put the Cubbies ahead. The rest of the league gets back to work today. NFL news, a person familiar with the situation says the Atlanta Falcons will not renegotiate Julio Jones' contract this year. The decision casts doubt on whether the star receiver will be in training camp next week. The Falcons reportedly informed Jones several weeks ago they didn't have room under the salary cap to offer him a new deal this season. Jones dipped on the NFL's list of highest-paid receivers during the offseason when several other guys got big new contracts. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the biggest thing in the news this past week. And of course, that would be the Trump and Putin meeting. And we're hearing, everything from, that President Trump has committed treason and he should be immediately impeached and we should impeach his whole, the vice president. And I mean, people are posting what, the definition of treason and how we deal with it in the Constitution. And it's all a lot of hyperbole. And one of the things I want to focus on here. And again, if you've listened to the show on a regular basis, I am not someone you're gonna call a Trump supporter. I voted for President Trump because I felt that he would do more of the conservative things that I like. I am a constitutional conservative. I'm also conservative in many social issues, but I'm a little bit libertarian in certain ones too. But when it comes to foreign policy and economic policy, I am a constitutional conservative. I like doing things that work, that have proven to work. I don't like to do experiments. So when it comes, and so what I'm getting at, there's a difference between the words and the actions. And unfortunately, there's that difference. Now, would it be nice if we didn't have to always separate the actions of President Trump from the words of President Trump? Yes, that would be, everybody would like that. And me included. And again, I'm not, if I agree with something he's doing, I support him. But I refuse to be an apologist for the president when he says stupid stuff. I'm going to be right there with you calling him out. And he tends to say or tweet stupid stuff. But what I've had to do, and I dare say you have to do this more often than you would like to admit with many leaders. And I say you would probably have had to do this with President Clinton if we had had Mrs. Clinton as a president, and you had to do it with her husband, and you had to do it with Bush. Most of them. Now it's more evident with President Trump. I'll admit that, but you can't always match the words to the actions. And it's never been more stark than it is with President Trump. But I'm trying to separate the words from the actions, and the actions tell me he's no friend of Russia. Now, he may be trying to get along with Putin, and he definitely said some troubling things. Again, not treasonous, but, something we should definitely pay attention to. But if you look at his actions, he hasn't done a lot of things that President Putin or that Vladimir Putin would be really happy about. The Russians are on the other side of the Syria conflict from us. we've bombed bases in Syria that had Russian planes there. So that's just one example. There's been several examples of world policy and decisions that the president has made that give no indication that he's a friend of Russia. And again, I understand when words are said that we don't like, we have to look at those words. But my experience with President Trump has been you really have to separate the words from the actions. And part of the reason for this, and again, I'm not making excuses for the man. I would very much prefer that he was a more measured speaker. But one of the things that you you look at with Trump is he's not a politician. He never ran for any office until he ran for president. He was a business person. But the more important thing to know about Trump, and I had to learn this from someone else. One of the podcasts that I listen to is the Dan Bongino podcast. I would encourage you to look that up. He's done a lot of stuff on the whole Mueller investigation and Trump-Russia collusion and all of that. But one of the things that he said, and he gave this from his personal experience because he's a guy that grew up in Queens, New York. Well, President Trump is also a guy from Queens, New York. A lot of guys from Queens, New York, and from New York in general, whether it's the Bronx or it's Manhattan, although Manhattan, where more of the rich kids grow up, but they have a certain edge to them, and they do things a certain way. And again, President Trump is not a politician, you know, until now. Obviously, you're the president, you're a politician now, but he wasn't a politician up until now, and he has a certain brash way of talking. He has a certain technique he uses when he's negotiating that, you know, whether you agree with it or not doesn't really matter. It exists. It's what he does. The reason that he seemed to be so nice to Kim Jong-un in person, but then, you know, previously he'd been calling him Little Rocket Man and, you know, talking about, you know, things about the leader of North Korea. And he's done similar things with Putin. He's made some comments that are pretty strong against Russia. But when he met with the man, he was very civil. He was very complimentary, maybe too much so. But it's part of his personality and his technique. Again, you don't have to agree with it, but you've got to recognize it. And the reason I bring up the fact that he's a Queens guy, and again, this was something Dan Bongino pointed out. The Queens guys are kind of the in-betweeners. You've got the Manhattan kids or the rich kids, so they're the privileged, you know, they can do what they want, they've got everything they need, and they're pretty, you know, they hold their heads up pretty high, they're pretty important. And then you've got the Bronx kids. The Bronx kids are the ones that don't have to be tough. You just assume they're tough. You know they are, and you don't mess with them because they have a reputation. Even if the individual isn't tough at all and has no reputation of his own, if you know he's a Bronx kid, you be careful because you know, he's probably been in a scrap or two, and he's probably pretty tough. Well, the Queens guys are kind of in the middle. They're not as rich as the Manhattan kids, and they're not known to be as tough as the Bronx kids. So they're constantly having to prove themselves. And again, I don't make excuses for President Trump, but I want to understand him. I want to know why he says the things he says. And I thought it was pretty astute what Mr. Bongino had to say, that, you know, you've got to think of him as a Queens guy, because to this day, that's who he is. He's not a politician with measured speech, and he goes off we used to get on Obama when he'd go off teleprompter and say a few goofy things. Well, President Trump seldom has a teleprompter, and even when he has prepared statements, he usually writes in his own notes and says things he wants to say. So you know, so you have to measure things knowing that about him and then knowing, looking at the actions as much or more than the words. And again, I'll reiterate this for the third time. I would love for him, for us to not to have to do that. It doesn't make sense that we have to do that. But the fact is we do. And so it brings me to the next point. No one's going to convince me of treason. No one's going to convince me, and the MAGA people aren't going to bring me to their side either. I'm not a Trump supporter. I want my president to do well. I wanted Obama to do well. I didn't agree with most of the things he was doing because he's a very liberal, progressive guy, and I'm a conservative. But I want the country to do well, and the president is a part of making the country do well. But we've got to fall somewhere in between. And I've got a couple of examples to look at to where the hyperbole needs to stop, and we need to talk like adults that think these things through. And again, I'm not a MAGA guy. I don't think the president plays, you know, four-dimensional chess when everybody else is playing checkers. But I give him credit when he does things that I think are helping the country. And I'll be the first to get on him when he says stupid things or tweets stupid things. But I wanted to look at some of the other dealings with, you know, Putin has been in power in Russia for quite some time. He kind of took a hiatus where he was the prime minister and Medvedev was the president. But let's be honest, Putin was running the country and he continues to run the country. So there's been a few presidents that have dealt with him, and nobody ever, you know, they were all friendly to him. Nobody ever cried foul. I'm looking back. Obama met with Putin on several occasions. I'm looking at different meetings, and what I'm getting at is obviously all of the, you know, presidents meet with all different world leaders. And there's different summits and things where the Russians are included and meet with Putin. Now, but the reason I bring these up is I'm looking at several occasions where Obama met with Putin. He was friendly with him. He treated him with respect. He didn't really ever call him out the way that people were crying for Trump to call him out, which is kind of a funny thing because we think of Trump as a kind of a brash guy, and the media and the left are constantly on him for being bombastic and being rude sometimes and saying rude things, and he does, and he often does it through Twitter, and they're constantly saying, you know, don't be so rude, you need to be more presidential. But then he goes to a press conference and he goes to a summit where other world leaders are lined up, and he wants him, and they want him to attack Putin, like they want to call him out in front of the reporters and in front of the other world leaders and just start, you know, accusing him of things and whatever. That's not good diplomacy. And again, you can disagree with the tactic, but he did what most other presidents have done. He treated him with respect. And I know you can say we had this meeting with the NATO countries, and he said some pretty tough things there. Well, you know, I call it like tough love. You know, those are our allies. Those are people we're aligned with. They're our friends. But when they're screwing up, you tell them. You let them know. When my son does something he shouldn't do, I call him out and I straighten him out and make him do things the right way. Because it's not because I don't like him. It's because I do like him. I want the best for him. And it's the same kind of thing with that. They say, oh, well, he called out our friends at NATO. Well, yeah, because they weren't paying their fair share. Now, you can't compare it to what we pay. We get to decide, as long as we're paying our 2% toward defense, we've met the NATO threshold. And if we want to spend 18%, that's our business. So you can't compare one country to the next. But what you can do is you can ask them to pay their fair share, to pay their 2% toward defense that they are supposed to be paying under NATO. And they weren't doing it. And he called them out on it. And he also, again, another time where he wasn't friendly to Putin, he called out the Germans for buying 70% of their energy resources from the Russians and for having a secret pipeline that avoids some of the taxation and the levies that would be on that energy if it had gone over land and had gone through different countries. So these are, you can call it tough love, you can call it bombastic, but it worked. They're starting to get in line and agreeing to pay their fair share, to pay their share of what they're supposed to do to be a member of NATO. So that's the difference that I make. That doesn't excuse him for being extra nice to Putin. I don't know why he felt the need to do that. But again, words are one thing, actions are another. And again, I'm kind of scrolling through, you know, Bush met with Putin on at least three occasions, was very friendly to him, very cordial. President Clinton met with him on at least two occasions that I can see. Again, very, very cordial. The Clinton Foundation has a lot of financial connections to Russia. So, of course, he's going to be nice to Putin. His foundation was getting a lot of money from his country, and you know that, and because he's basically a dictator, he can control that money flow. So of course President Clinton was going to be nice to him, and he was. So, you know, we've got a lot of hyperbole going on about all of that. It's really not necessary. Let's judge the man on his actions. You can judge him on his words, but you can't. I just don't see where you can draw the treason line. I think that's just a little bit ridiculous. But again, at the same time, I do not agree with the cult of personality of the MAGA people. I didn't like the cult of personality that surrounded Obama and continues to surround him. My feeling about this country is we are a country of laws, not a country of men. The president is a temporary position holder. The office is permanent, but the man is temporary. The men in Congress are temporary. The judges are temporary. That's why we're not a country of men. We're a country of laws. It's another reason I don't agree with socialism. One of the things we keep hearing every time socialism fails, well, it just wasn't the right person in charge. Well, at which point does it become that the system sucks and not the person running it sucks? It's a bad philosophy that no man, it's always going to be the wrong man because it doesn't work. And so I would apply that, you know, the same logic there. We're a system of laws because men are imperfect. Words are also imperfect, but we can adapt our laws. We can change the Constitution. We have a couple of avenues. Well, it's the same section of the Constitution, but there's two different ways to amend the Constitution. We can do that, but it takes majorities to do that so that one man can't make those kinds of decisions. And, you know, frankly, a lot of the things that the left got upset about when Trump came into office was he was undoing things that Obama done. Well, he wouldn't be able to do that without Congress if they weren't done improperly by President Obama. You can't run the country with executive orders. So it was really easy for Trump to just reverse those because they were not really legal to begin with. That was the problem with the Dreamers. The DACA was never passed by Congress. That was created out of whole cloth by President Obama. And it was set to expire, and the president was more than happy to have it expire because it was an executive order. It was not the rule of law. And frankly, if we want a DACA program, we need the Congress to pass it. So again, my love of this country comes from the structure, the genius of the Constitution. And that's not to say it's perfect. It's not. But the Constitution created the most successful nation on earth in the fastest period of time that it's ever happened. And there's a reason for that. It was well, well thought out. These were men that studied the past. They studied the different forms of government. They studied these things. And again, did they miscalculate on some things? Yeah, they did. I don't think they ever foresaw the Supreme Court becoming the last word. It's not supposed to be the last word. They're not supposed to make law. So I think they would have put stronger structure around the Supreme Court had they foreseen that. I don't think they ever imagined that there would be career politicians that would be in there for 30 years, 40 years as a senator or as, you know, a House member. These people had... they had businesses to tend to, and they never dreamed it would become a career. So I think they would have probably, had they foreseen what was going to happen, they would have put term limits in. But we can do those things. We can amend the Constitution. But when you have this cult of personality that surrounds Obama, and I dare say it surrounds Trump in a lot of ways, it's not healthy. It's not a good thing. And I try and avoid it. And I'm going to like a lot of what Trump has done because I'm a conservative and he's done some very conservative things. But again, I'm trying to look at these things realistically, and kind of let's go to one parting thing for those that are still hanging on to this idea of treason. Let's go to a little audio. I think I have just enough time for this. This was from CBS News back during the Obama administration. And let's just take a listen to this.
President Obama was far from Washington today in South Korea for a summit with world leaders on nuclear security. But he couldn't escape presidential politics, not after a live microphone picked up a comment that he made to the Russian president. Senior White House correspondent Bill Plant is traveling with the president in Seoul tonight. Bill?
Scott, President Obama and outgoing Russian President Medvedev were still deep in conversation as cameras were ushered into the room. And President Obama was overheard giving Medvedev a very candid political assessment of his ability to deal with the major problems between the U.S. and Russia. All of the issues can be solved, the president told Medvedev, but he stressed that it was particularly important for incoming Russian President Vladimir Putin to give him space on the missile defense system, which the U.S. and NATO want to install in Europe.
This is my last election, basically. Yeah. After my election, I have more flexibility. I transmit this information to Vladimir and Medvedev.
Republican presidential contender Mitt Romney said the overheard remark signaled that the president...
Okay, so I don't know how well you could hear that, but, you know, he basically told Medvedev, and that was what I was talking about. Medvedev really was just a stand-in for Putin at the time, that he would have more flexibility after the election. What he was talking about was the missile defense system. See, we were supposed to put missile defense in different parts of Europe, and President Obama was letting the Russians know that he wasn't going to put those missile defense systems in, much to the sadness of some of the countries that thought they were getting missile defense systems. But the key thing to kind of take away from that was when Medvedev said to him, "I will transmit this to Vladimir for you." That was just showing really who was really running the country. It was really Putin the whole time. He was trying to live by their laws about their leadership. But it's basically a dictatorship, and Putin is the dictator. And President Obama was saying, "Hey, I'm going to work with you." Now, I'll admit there was some people that were crying treason at the time. They were mostly, you know, on the right, of course. But my reason for pointing this out is not to say, well, you know, look what he did. It's, you know, Trump did that. It's bad. But look, Obama did the same thing. It's not a whataboutism. It's the difference in the reaction. That could every bit be called treason as anything that Trump said, but you didn't hear that in that media report. You didn't hear them saying treason. We've got media members all over the country right now pushing the idea of treason and pushing the idea of impeachment. It's such a double standard. I mean, if those remarks weren't treasonous, and I don't think that they are, it bothers me that he said them, but it bothers me what Trump said too. But it's not treason, and it's not treason when Obama did it. It's not treason when Trump did it. And frankly, the actions, again, Obama told him what he was going to do, and he did it. He didn't put the missiles in. So I guess just because this was kind of the current story, I wanted to talk a little bit about it. But I think my main point of this is we just need to maybe take a step back and not be so, you know, just not be so crazy about these things. And we're going to take a break here, and we just got a couple minutes left. We've got a little NBA talk with my two guests, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and now joining me in the studio, the Rogue Talk mascot, Cameron Smith. Welcome to Rogue Talk, Cameron.
Thank you for having me.
And my new intern, his first time on the radio with me this summer. And, of course, that's Hunter Arnsdorf. Welcome to Rogue Talk, Hunter.
Thank you.
So we've only got a couple minutes left, but let's hit some of the big changes in the NBA. We got a lot of guys changing teams, and let's go to the one that just happened, the most recent one. Well, at least one of the most recent ones. Let's talk about Kawhi Leonard. And Cameron, tell me what that trade was.
Well, the San Antonio Spurs, Kawhi Leonard wanted out. He felt that the team didn't treat him very well with his injury over the past last season. So they traded him to Toronto for DeMar DeRozan, with Danny Green going along too for Jacob
I don't know how to say it either, but that's okay.
He's a foreign player.
Yeah, he's not a big part of that trade. So, Hunter, what was your impression of that trade? It looked like neither one of those guys was too happy about it.
No, I just knew that Kawhi Leonard wanted out of there.
Yeah, he definitely did. I'm not sure that was the trade he was looking for, but So, Cameron, what else did you have to say about that trade? We don't have a whole lot of time left.
I think the Spurs definitely got the better end of the trade. They got a first-round pick, protected. And I think DeMar's younger, and Kawhi's a one-year rental for Toronto, and there's not a 100% guaranteed he'll re-sign with them.
Yeah, that's it. He's under contract. Yeah, I mean, he's only got a year left in his contract. DeRozan's got a couple year, 2 or 3 years or something left in his. So I think you're right. The Spurs got a steal there in that trade. And let's hit one more. Hunter, tell me, where did LeBron end up?
LeBron ended up in Los Angeles.
Yeah, so he's with the Lakers now. I'm curious to see how they build that team. And honestly, guys, I didn't save you a whole lot of time today, but Hunter, I wanted to get you introduced to the audience. Hunter's going to be on the air a lot more throughout the summer, and we'll hopefully get Cameron back too. Otherwise, everybody be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice. 94.3 The Bridge. Or on demand at 943 The Bridge.com.